With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hope everyone had a great weekend. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on Channel Q.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, we are here for you daily. Well, weekdays, at least. We do take the weekend off because we deserve, like, all of you.
Well, you basically are living in your own little wonderland of a palace over there in Napa Valley. Once again, not social distancing. It's a recurring situation with Shira Lazar. But it's okay. Are you enjoying your vacation?
It's not really a vacation because I have to work, but
it
I
is
get
a vacation.
To...
It's a staycation is what the kids
are
calling.
Oh, staycation. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was a staycation weekend. My friend lives here now. She moved from San Francisco. Kind of like, I think that's a trend. A lot of people moving from the big cities to like more nature-y places.
Well, the
like
only
in the
trend
suburbs I'm, or outside the cities.
I mean, the only trend I'm seeing with you is just you're squatting at all your friends' nice
yes.
houses.
Hey, I'm very lucky. You know what? I am creative, and I find ways to experience life without spending money.
What's the saying? You know, don't hate the player, hate the game. I mean, I appreciate your beautiful artwork because you're killing it. You are sitting by the pools. She's taking.
Tips on living your best life in quarantine.
I mean, seriously, Shira's even doing videos on Instagram. Go check it out. Of how to, if she's ever feeling anxious, she's in a bikini and she's showing off the key things.
Well,
to
you
do.
Know what?
I was like, wow.
The way for people to click through to good and important content is just
is
wear
boobs.
A bikini.
What's coming up on the show today?
Well, we've got Harry Haynes' mom joining us. So you might know Harry. He was an actor, musician known from American Horror Story and The OA. Mm-hmm. Passed last year unexpectedly. It was really horrible.
Yeah.
Their mom is putting out their music and that we never got to hear. So stay tuned for their latest single later in the show and just that incredible story and his legacy as well.
Like, honestly, kind of like another Yes Queen in all honesty. She's so amazing. She's great.
Plus how you could be immune to COVID-19 without contracting it. So there's a new study that came up. We have a doctor from Johns Hopkins University joining us for that. So lots coming up on the show. But first, let's get into what's trending this hour.
Let's do it.
The mail-in voting debates continue. Trump revealed today at his White House press conference why the USPS won't be able to handle mail-in ballots for the upcoming election.
This is something that's so messed up. And by the way, I have to say, the post office for many, many years has been, you know, run in a fashion that hasn't been great. Great workers and everything, but they have old equipment, very old equipment. And I don't think the post office is prepared for a thing like this. You have to ask the people at the post office. But how can the post office be expected to handle? They have regular mailing. And then now on top of that, they have the internet where you have Amazon and these companies doing, you know, all the buying. Instead of going to a department store, they go buy through mail. So you have massive numbers of purchases now going through the post office, purchases of items and gifts. And that's a tremendous strain on the post office. The post office loses a fortune. It has been for many, many years, for decades. So now on top of it, it has this. And the Amazons of the world and the others, they pay very, very little money. They lose money on every, the post office loses money, which is ridiculous, on every package it delivers. But
by the way, he references Amazon, like they don't pay enough. Well, maybe you should tax those corporations, eh? Maybe that would be.
I mean, I know that was probably
the USPS.
The most boring clip that we've ever played because all he did was ramble. I'm sorry that we put you through this, y'all.
Isn't that what he does every day? Meanwhile, he's also threatening to take Nevada to court. Today, Trump also threatened to challenge a bill approved by Nevada's state legislator that would guarantee mail-in ballots to all active voters. He accused Democratic Governor Steve Sisolak, who is expected to sign the bill into law, of using the coronavirus crisis to steal the election after state lawmakers approved legislation Sunday. So, of course, they passed this after their June primary election, where voters were forced to wait several hours before casting their ballot at limited number of polling places that officials kept open during the coronavirus outbreak. So the bill is to help voters avoid those long lines in November, to ensure that every active registered voter receives a mail-in ballot ahead of November and in any future election taking place during any sort of disaster or emergency crisis. So it's supposed to be an option, an alternative, as we like to say. Now, the Apple fire is burning in parts of Riverside and San Bernardino counties, and it's grown to at least 20,516 acres and is 5% contained.
Oh, so scary. It's like, yes, out of nowhere, these fires, it's just wild. Moving here, that's the most devastating thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yep. Lisa Cox, the fire information officer for the San Bernardino National Forest, said, "We've got extremely steep, rugged terrain. We have many different drainages that are all kind of intersecting together. It creates this effect of different wind patterns and creates more erratic fire behavior. So we are just hoping this ends as soon as possible." Now let's move into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
I mean, here are some pop culture stories that are trending. This one is kind of really devastating and sad. Frank Ocean's teen brother, Ryan Bro, was reportedly killed in a fiery car crash. He was only 18 years old, and a second young man were both killed early Sunday when a car they were riding in crashed into a tree and went up in flames in Southern California. You know, Ryan Bro is obviously Frank Ocean's younger brother. It's so sad. Frank hasn't said anything about this. Frank's not really a social media person anyway, so I'm pretty sure we probably won't hear from him. But the two occupants were pronounced dead at the scene, and it wasn't immediately clear who was behind the wheel or what caused the fiery crash. And so we are sending so much love to Frank Ocean and his family, because this is devastating. And way to go, 2020. Always ruining everything. But I do want to move out of the T report and go into a new Channel Q initiative that we're doing. Right now, children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry. Channel Q and radio.com have an easy way for you to help feed local students and their families. Text the word NEED to 76278 to give a buck. I mean, only a dollar, and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones. Just $1 will make a huge difference, everyone. Learn more about Feed Our Families on our socials and at WeAreChannelQ.com.
Love that. Now coming up, why Dr. Birx on the coronavirus task force is getting dragged by Nancy Pelosi and now Trump. Could she be the next White House staffer to get the axe? We find out next. President Donald Trump, for the first time, publicly criticized White House coronavirus response coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx today after she delivered a not so positive message and issued some warnings about the pandemic. But first, how did this all go down? Well, it seems like Nancy Pelosi expressed distrust in Dr. Birx on ABC News this week, Sunday. And here she is also talking about that on CNN.
We had a conversation about how we stopped the virus. And when we did, they were making contentions about how tracing isn't a valuable thing, we shouldn't do it. I said, well, that's not what most scientists say. And they said, well, we'll bring a scientist to say that. I said, well, sure, it's not Dr. Birx, because I don't have confidence in anyone who stands there while the president says, swallow Lysol and it's going to cure your virus.
You're saying she hasn't challenged his disinformation.
Well, she
enough.
Stood there and no, I think that she has enabled.
And then Dr. Birx reacted to Pelosi's criticism on CNN as well.
I have tremendous respect for the speaker, and I have tremendous respect for her long dedication to the American people. This was not a Pollyannish view. I have never been called Pollyannish or non-scientific or non-data-driven, and I will stake my 40-year career on those fundamental principles of utilizing data to really implement better programs to save more lives.
And then Trump tweeted up a storm saying this, amongst many other things: in order to counter Nancy, Deborah took the bait and hit us. Pathetic. So what is going on? Senior editor Mark Fisher from the Washington Post joins us right now. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so was it fair for Pelosi to target Birx? Why not Fauci too?
Well, Birx and Fauci have played very different roles as this virus has swept across the country. Fauci was and is the expert on epidemiology, on infectious disease. He's the guy who has been in the battle against viruses going back to AIDS, going back to the 80s, and he was in charge. But he was front and center and getting a lot of publicity, and as we know, the president does not like that. And so when you move into the spotlight in this administration, you are going to get pushed out. Or pushed aside, and he got pushed aside. So the administration stopped him from taking interviews with the major networks, stopped him from appearing on TV with the president, and moved Deborah Birx into that position. She had been kind of the number two, slightly different responsibility, but now she was clearly the voice of the administration as far as scientists went. And she played it in a very different way from Fauci. Fauci stuck to the science, stuck to the facts, kept pushing back against the president and saying, we don't have this under control. We need to have more restrictions. We need to be wearing masks. Deborah Birx was a lot more politic. She was sticking to the science, but she was also creating a space where Trump's sort of flights of fancy about the virus could thrive next to the science. And so they were kind of getting along. And then there was a series of reports in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and elsewhere that chronicled just how much Deborah Birx was giving in to the president, how much she was letting him set the agenda, how much she was letting his miracle cure kind of rhetoric get out there without any pushback. And that's where Nancy Pelosi's getting this from. So she's reading the papers and she's saying Deborah Birx is not being a straight ahead kind of scientist. She's not sticking to the facts. She's playing politics here and she needs to be called out for it. And that's why Pelosi said what she said.
All right. Again, you're listening to senior editor Mark Fisher from the Washington Post as we talk about this back and forth between Pelosi, Birx, and Trump. The she said, he said, it seems.
Well, I think what's interesting is, and I would love to know your perspective, Mark, Nancy Pelosi, she was saying facts when she was saying, you know, Dr. Birx has kind of been this enabler to Trump's, the way Trump has handled the coronavirus, right? Do you think it was smart politically, though, for her to really speak out against Dr. Birx, especially when it does seem like she is now the front-facing person when it comes to handling all of this?
Well, I think from Pelosi's perspective, there are two reasons to do it. Number one is political. At this point, with Joe Biden kind of holding back, holding fire, and trying to show Americans that he can bring people together from different parts of the ideological landscape, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are put in the position of attack dog. And so it makes more sense politically for them to go after Birx. And then just on a pure policy perspective, she felt that she needed to call out Birx because Birx has been going off the reservation, going off the basic science here and making allowances for Trump's view, which is that everything's hunky-dory, everything's getting better. And Birx has been much more reluctant than Fauci to say, no, they're not getting better, they're getting worse. And so it makes sense on both of those levels. The only possible downside for Pelosi to do this is that sets Trump off. Yeah. Well, is that a downside? I think the Democrats are now calculating that the more Trump goes out there and reacts with enormous anger and aggression and insults, the more his base will continue to sour on him and pull away from him.
Now, do you think Dr. Birx is going to change her strategy? It seems like her being on CNN and agreeing with the fact that this is not just the end, we're at the beginning, more people and agreeing with that number 300,000 people by the end of the year, that we might even have to wear masks inside with our family, like her kind of agreeing with that, where does that place her in all of this now?
That's a great question, Shira. I think, you know, let's try something really hard. Let's try to put ourselves in Deborah Birx's position right now.
Yeah.
So she's like all the other folks who work for Trump, in that they go in there. Let's leave out the people who are just hardcore Trumpers. All the other people who go to work for him think they can change him or think they can restrain him. And in Deborah Birx's case, she's a Democrat. She worked for Obama. She was in charge of Obama's AIDS program. And she needed to find a way to push back against him and still survive. And is she going to survive? I don't know. Nobody survives forever, but she's trying to an impossible situation. It's lose-lose.
Yeah, it seems like that. All right. Well, Mark Fisher, thanks again for joining us today. Mark, again, is the senior editor from The Washington Post. Wow, what a mad situation we're in. Now coming out, could TikTok be saved if an American company buys it? We find out next in 10 minutes. We are back, and Trump keeps saying he's going to ban TikTok. But could it be saved, and how? Earlier today, he did say TikTok will be out of business by September 15th and gave us insights on his conversations with Microsoft as a possible acquirer.
And here's the deal. I don't mind if, whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, a big company, a secure company, very, very American company, buy it. It's probably easier to buy the whole thing than to buy 30% of it. Because I say, how do you do 30%? Who's going to get the name? The name is hot. The brand is hot. And who's going to get the name? How do you do that if it's owned by two different companies? So my personal opinion was you're probably better off buying the whole thing rather than buying 30% of it. I think buying 30% is complicated. But if somebody, and whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, buys it, that'll be interesting. I did say that if you buy it, whatever the price is, that goes to whoever owns it, because I guess it's China, essentially, but more than anything else. I said a very substantial portion of that price is going to have to come into the Treasury of the United States.
Joining us to break this all down is CNET editorial director Jason Heiner. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
So what's your take on this latest response that Trump has? I mean, he said this at a recent press conference that, you know, if someone's willing to buy the app, he won't necessarily ban it. What's going on?
Yeah, and the Trump administration's kind of been telegraphing for a little while, right? That they're like, we're taking a look at this. We're seeing if this could violate people's privacy. And mostly they're worried about it. And they said it. They said, we're worried that all these Americans are giving their data and to TikTok, and they're afraid that the Chinese government is going to have access to it. They said that, you know, straight away. And so the deal that's kind of been worked out to keep TikTok running in the US potentially is them selling TikTok, ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, which is based in Beijing, selling the US users and version of the app to Microsoft. And Microsoft then doing a security audit, moving the data from China over here, and then adding some more US-based security to it so that people can keep dancing on TikTok and teenagers can keep doing their thing. That's where it stands at the moment.
All right. Well, I think that a lot of people are wondering, you know, is this fight against TikTok from the Trump administration, do you think this is going to make more young people vote for Biden? Or do you think it's going to make a lot of young people, you know, just anti-Trump, even though a lot of them are, but, you know, come out to actually vote because he is attacking one of their favorite platforms?
You know, I think that would be more the case, like if there was an outage and, like, you know, TikTok went down for a month while all this was happening, I think that would probably be more likely. I think it's less likely if the users never see, you know, anything, they never see an outage, they never see any disruption, and they just keep being able to use it. And in the background, now it's owned by Microsoft, and maybe they have to accept some new terms of service at one point, which they'll just click through as fast as possible and never really take a hard look at it. But maybe that's a cynical view, but, you know, most people don't really dig that deep into these kinds of issues when it comes to tech.
That is true. Again, you're listening to CNET editorial director Jason Heiner. I always say we're a bit in a bubble. We forget that. You know what I mean?
Like, if an American company like Microsoft actually purchased TikTok and took over its operation, I mean, would that really even solve the problem?
Yeah. So what it sounds like, and obviously they've given themselves to the middle of September to work out a deal on this, if they can work out a deal between ByteDance, the company that in Beijing that owns it, and Microsoft. And what Microsoft has said that is that the new structure would build on the experience TikTok users currently love while adding world-class security, privacy, and digital safety protection. So all of that just meaning that they would take all of the data from China and bring it over to servers here. So I think that ultimately what they're trying to do is make it look like to TikTok users that they're not really going to see anything different and probably never notice a change if all of it goes as planned. Whereas the US government then gets placated that, you know, they're not worried about Americans giving all of this free data about America to a Chinese company that they have questions about. Obviously, there's other companies that have had this experience before, and it's been more of a challenge, like Huawei and others whose devices, you know, are not available in the US.
Yeah.
And they can no longer use other software and stuff like that.
I was going to ask that if this is unique, because it seems like he's just using this as like a point of attack for China. And oh, so if this problem goes away, well, will the issues with China go away? Probably not. But is this distracting from something? Because it just seems to be so much at the forefront.
Yeah, it really is. And what the Chinese will say is that this is all politics. It's all, gamesmanship and that kind of thing, that really the US is scared of these Chinese companies building really good products and attracting a lot of users, and then them not going to US-based products like Facebook or others, right? That this is ultimately about an unfair battle they're trying to wage against Chinese companies so that American companies can be more successful. That's what the Chinese will argue. You can read that in the New York Times and other places too.
All right. CNET Editorial Director Jason Heiner, thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure.
Thanks. All right. Now coming up, it's like deja vu. Facebook. Oh my God. Another tech platform. We're like all about the tech today. They're refusing to take down a doctored video of Nancy Pelosi appearing to be drunk. We discuss why next in 10 minutes. Facebook is refusing to take down a video of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that has been doctored to make her appear to be drunk. Now, this isn't the first time this happened. It's the second time.
Yep.
Pelosi video like this has gone viral on the platform. Here's the latest one, though.
I'm sorry, did you what?
To accuse a TV host of murder on Twitter?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. What did he do?
Psycho Joe.
Are you talking about Joe Scarborough?
Yes.
You're asking me about the appropriateness of the actions of this president of the United States?
So, other platforms, it seems like they took it down. People flagged it and they're like, yeah, this is wrong. It's doctored. It's fake news, misinformation. However, Facebook, it seems like they have these new policies that say when a video is determined false, its distribution is dramatically reduced and people who see it, try to share it, or have already shared it, see warnings alerting them that it's false. However, they're not going to necessarily take it down. So Ryan, what is your take? Do you think it's wrong that this has stayed up?
You know, to be quite honest, I do think it's very wrong that it stayed up. Like, I get the memeifying and the parody.
You did laugh. You did laugh.
Yeah, I think it's okay that I laughed. I thought it was funny, but that doesn't take away that it was wrong. And the fact that we continue to see these videos, and like I said, there was a clear difference, right? When you know for sure that a video is a meme and you know for sure that this is not based in truth, but a lot of times these extreme right wingers are like trying to pose this as it's real information. And that's just not true. And that's where the problematic line laws, falls, whatever. But I just think that's the issue there. And I don't think, you know, we can laugh and we can ha-ha about it all the time. But when it starts to get reported and Facebook's not doing their responsibility, when Twitter's doing their responsibility to take away stuff, I mean, they've even done that with our own president. And so it just feels like, why is Facebook not holding people accountable or itself accountable? That's the issue.
Well, yeah, I think if a person who had posted this put comedy or hashtag meme or hashtag funny, but yes, there are probably people that are seeing this that hate Pelosi. They're saying, yeah, look, she's drunk and irresponsible. You know, we shouldn't be supporting her and the Democrats. However, my argument around this is, if it was the other side, we see doctored videos all the time of Trump, you know, edits. And we could say, yeah, we think it's
we know our jokes. Fake. We do it's know jokes. It's jokes. No
but
one
there
has
are
ever
people
tried.
That might not think it's a joke, too.
Yeah,
do you
but that's
that other side.
But I get that. I get your point. But that's the only way that people would not know it's a joke is if someone is framing it as it's not a joke. It happened in real time. Sort of like what people are doing on that TikTok video of like saying, well, here she is again drunk. It's kind of this repetitive thing. And I think it's also, unfortunately, making fun of her own speech or her own, like, her own abilities as a woman and power and like who she is. And I think that's a little gross. And so it just feels weird versus it being a Trump situation, because what Trump is saying is like normally outlandish stuff. It needs to be memeified just for us to not have a mental breakdown.
That's our perspective.
But versus, I mean,
to those people who like him, that's normal.
Yeah, enough, but Nancy Pelosi is actually on these, like, she's doing a press conference where she's talking about the facts of what's going on versus Donald Trump, which is normally just lying out of his ass.
So since we have a moment and we have a bit of time, let's just play the clip from last year and what it actually sounds like, so you could really see the difference.
And then he had a press conference in the Rose Garden with all this short sort of visuals that obviously were planned long before. And then he had a press conference in the Rose Garden with all this short sort of visuals that obviously were planned long before.
All right. I mean, it's not difficult to do this, by the way. This isn't like science, right? To like doctor something like this.
They slow it down. Yeah.
They slow it down. And because of that, it creates some humor. And basically, she becomes the butt of the joke, which is not nice. She deserves better. She really does.
I mean, I think people are going to do what they do. They're going to create the content that they want to create. But it is social media's platforms, these platforms' responsibility to make sure things are not seen as facts versus, you know, just comedy. Like, that's just not... If Facebook doesn't want to do that, then Facebook is going to have a lot of issues continuing on, you know?
Yeah, they already do. All right, well, coming up, the Republican National Convention could happen entirely without press. Find out more on that in What's Trending This Hour next. Welcome back to the show. And remember, our favorite Dr. Chris from Loveline is back tonight and is going to be talking about cultural fat phobia and specifically about how that affects our daily life choices. So there you go. You also have to slide into their DMs. They always say that at Loveline so you can get your love and sex questions answered. I might do that tonight because I have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Not surprising at all.
All right, but let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. U.S. District Court Judge Esther Salas made a public plea, speaking out for the first time in an emotional video since her son's murder. If we remember, her son and husband were shot at their New Jersey home by obviously a murderer, but also a lawyer who was an anti-feminist lawyer. It's just a horrible story.
Said, Mom, let's keep talking. I love talking to you, Mom. And it was at that exact moment that the doorbell rang. And Daniel looked at me and said, who is that? And before I could say a word, he sprinted upstairs. Within seconds, I heard the sound of bullets and someone screaming, no!
This video is heart-wrenching to watch and listen to.
Yeah.
But something needs to be done.
It's very sad. It's a very sad story.
So we're sending our love and prayers to her and her family during this time. And hopefully they gain the protections they need so this doesn't happen again to any other judge as well, or anyone who's, a government official.
Yeah.
That matter. Now, the Republican National Committee says it is still debating whether press will be allowed to attend and cover its Charlotte convention events in person later this month. They said no final decision has been made, and we are still looking through logistics and press coverage options. We are working with the parameters set before us by state and local guidelines regarding the number of people who can attend events. That comes from RNC Communications Director Michael Ahrens. Republicans are hoping the issue will be finalized, though, in the coming weeks, but they're saying that the already scaled back conference will likely be subject to more change given the alterations made so far, because things just keep changing. We're not sure where life will be tomorrow, let alone in a month.
I mean, honestly.
Now, a Virginia judge temporarily blocked an attempt to remove a monument honoring Confederate General Robert E. Lee in Richmond today. It's all because of this lawsuit. The plaintiffs say removing the monument would violate an 1890 deed in which Virginia, having been transferred the land where the statue sits, agreed to, quote, faithfully guard and affectionately protect it.
They're going to make out with this the statue. Cool.
Never heard that comparison.
Affectionately statues, protected.
It seems like it. Oh, yeah, I like that. They also argue that removing the monument could result in the area losing its National Historic Landmark designation. Mm. A loss of a priceless work of art could lead to a loss of tax treatment, reduction in property values, or perhaps increase it if you don't have a Confederate general on the property. Just saying.
This is a crazy story.
Yeah. All right, let's move into some more crazy stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
All right, so here are some pop culture stories, our story that are trending right now. Toni Braxton revealed her secret beauty routine, and it's quite unique. Here's a clip of that.
Here, okay, it is, I'm going to be honest, it is a vibrator. It is a vibrator, but I call it a face tingler. Tingles the muscles in my face and get them activated and working. I haven't used it on anything else other than my face, okay? Just FYI. I just take this and got the little ball here, which is perfect. Sometimes I put it in the freezer. It's really cold. I just kind of rub it and it just activates all those muscles. Get them together. We are working today. We are going to be cute today.
So yeah, she revealed that she uses a vibrator for her skin routine for Vogue beauty tips. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. I want to try that.
I bet you do. And those are your pop culture stories that are trending.
I mean, it makes sense because I tried it. You know, you have to put more blood in your skin. If you don't want Botox, you just like slap your skin around, make sure it has some cold on it.
Yes.
I could see it working. Multi-usage vibrators. You don't have to be embarrassed by your vibrator anymore.
I agree.
But we are doing something really cool at radio.com, and we're going to be helping people out who are in need. So we want to talk about this amazing program that we are launching right now. Children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry. Now, this is really sad.
Yeah.
So Channel Q and radio.com have an easy way for you to help feed local students and their families. It's super easy. All you have to do is text the word need to 76278 to give a buck, a dollar, and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones.
It's that easy.
Yeah. Need to 76278. Just $1 can make such a big difference. And you can learn more about this project that we're doing. It's called Feed Our Families on our socials at We Are Channel Q. And of course, our website, wearechannelq.com. All right. And now coming up, babies are being stranded in the U.S. because of the pandemic. What it will take for families to be reunited next in 10 minutes. We are back, and the pandemic is affecting everyone around the world in different ways, especially surrogate mothers. So we read this story, which was wild. Ryan shared it this week, and we're like, we have to talk about this.
Yes.
It was about a surrogate mother, or no, a surrogate. She's not the actual mom, who is now stuck with the baby in the U.S. because they can't get the baby to China, where the father is, and the father can't even go to the U.S. from China because of this travel ban.
Yeah.
You can see the complication there. And now the surrogate is basically stuck taking care of this baby.
And yeah, and the interesting thing about this story is obviously there's an international, it's happening internationally, but this is happening right here at home in the States. There's so many people going through this, so many surrogates, so many parents just trying to get their child. Yeah. And what's happening here? If, you know, what if the surrogate doesn't want to take care of this baby? Where does this baby go? Like, there's so many questions. And I didn't even think about this when you think about the pandemic. Like, how do you think about this? Like, this is wild.
So Melissa B. Brisman, founder of Reproductive Possibilities and Surrogate Fund Management, is with us to get into what happens and the current state of surrogates and families internationally and here in this country. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Well, it certainly is a crisis for the international clients, especially because if they're not allowed here, then the baby does have to be cared for by somebody else. So if you're on the travel list of countries that can't come here right now because of the pandemic, you have to wait until your baby's born to be able to get entry into the United States because you have to have a U.S. citizen child in order to be exempt from the travel ban. But then you have to be able to get a flight out of your country, right?
Yeah.
So it does become problematic. And we have also had clients who have not been able to reach their babies, but you don't have to leave the baby with the surrogate. I mean, there are charities that set up, sometimes people call them cuddlers, where people will they're certified by the state from the charity, and they watch the baby until the baby can be given to its natural parents.
Still, this is wild. And also in this article, it talked about then the child, because they're born here, are they considered an American citizen, and they need a passport to get out as well?
Yes, they are a U.S. citizen, and they do need a passport, and there's no expedited passports right now unless it's an emergency. This is not by the State Department considered an emergency.
Crazy.
What? Wait, really? It's not considered an emergency to go get your child?
Well, no, once you're here and you want to send the child back to the home country with the parents, since it's a U.S. citizen baby, it's not considered life or death to get the child out of the United States. And it's a big hassle because these clients have to stay here for months and months and months. And sometimes they don't speak the language and they don't have a lot of money necessarily to be able to get a hotel for 3 months and wait for their passport. So it's a huge burden on the international clients, not to mention the surrogates who didn't sign up for this. In addition, for our US-based clients, it can be problematic as well. So for instance, if you live in New Jersey, right, and you're a surrogate in New Jersey and you're delivering, but the intended parents live in Texas and you give birth today and you're giving birth early, right? Someone from Texas can't come to our state right now, right? They have to quarantine for 14 days, right? So they if the baby's born early in New Jersey, someone's going to have to take that baby out of New Jersey to the parents.
Wow.
Or the people are going to have to come from Texas, stay in a hotel for 2 weeks, and then get to see their baby for the first time.
What a S show. Okay, Melissa Brisman is with us right now, who's a founder of Reproductive Possibilities and Surrogate Fund Management. We're talking about this surrogate crisis that's happening amidst the pandemic. And these are things that, like, I guess we don't see every day, even though it is happening, which is why we thought it was so fascinating and important to talk about today.
Absolutely. And, you know, another thing also is, so I started Reproductive Possibilities because all my children are born from surrogates and my oldest is 22. And one of the things that was really wonderful about my children was being able to be in the delivery room and see when they were born, right? And now with the pandemic, a lot of hospitals are not allowing intended parents in the delivery room if it's a highly contagious area. And some are not even allowing parents into the hospital. And I have had clients who had to take the babies. The surrogates had to bring the babies to the parking lot to give to the parents. And when most of the time the parents are in the hospital for the delivery. So it creates all sorts of issues that you don't even realize. So for instance, we've had a bunch of embryo transfers canceled. So the way a surrogate gets pregnant, right, is if she's a gestational surrogate, she has an embryo that's not genetically related to her put in her uterus, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say she was on medication and she was set to come to Connecticut. This happened to us, to have a transfer. The parents live in Connecticut. Their fertility clinic is in Connecticut. Then this pact between Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York says, if you live in Texas, you need a quarantine for 14 days. So meanwhile, for 6 weeks, this woman has been on medication to come to Connecticut for a transfer. Then the night before she's supposed to come, they say she has to quarantine for 14 days. Well, how's she going to do that? She's supposed to be at the clinic the next day.
Yeah.
In her uterus.
So I guess what can be done? Like, you know, as we wrap this up, you've brought up so many issues. What can the public do, or what is being done to fight this?
Well, the biggest, I mean, you can't have hospitals and states making exemptions if it's not safe. Yeah. But you certainly can have the State Department expediting its passports. And people could write to the State Department, and all this publicity is helping to put pressure on the State Department to make it an exception that if you have a surrogate birth, you can get an expedited passport. But so far, in response to letters that an organization I belong to, which is called the Academy of Assisted Reproductive Technology Attorneys, has written letters, and the State Department has responded by saying, basically, this is on a case-by-case basis by your local passport office, and we can't do anything right now.
All right. Well, thanks again for being with us and sharing all these stories.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
That was Melissa Brisman, founder of Reproductive Possibilities and Surrogate Fund Management. All right, now next up, could lockdown lead the way to better cities for people with disabilities? How you could be a better advocate for this community? Coming up in 10 minutes. We are back, and could the pandemic actually be making cities better for people with disabilities? Joining us right now is David Lepofsky, the chair of the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. Thanks for being here.
Greetings from Toronto, Canada.
Yes, love it, fellow Canadian. All right. Now, how has the pandemic made way for improvements in cities that benefit people with disabilities?
Well, let me turn around by saying that first, both in your country and ours and around the world, there are far too many barriers in our society, both physical barriers and other kind of barriers facing people with disabilities. And this is especially ridiculous because people with disabilities include everybody who's now got a disability and everybody who's going to get one later. We are the minority of everyone. So ultimately, these barriers hurt everyone. The pandemic has brought to light a number of these barriers in a way like never before, in part because people with disabilities in your country and mine are disproportionately bearing the burdens of the pandemic, are disproportionately exposed to get the disease, and disproportionately to suffer its biggest hardships. To that end, however, the pandemic has required everybody to rethink the way they did stuff. You know, instead of just business as usual at school or work or other areas, people need to start rethinking, to think about working at home or teaching school remotely and so on.
Right.
Well, the people who know the most about improvising to work around circumstances beyond their control are those of us who have disabilities.
Yeah.
We actually should have been the first place where people consulted. But one of the things that's been learned is some of the things we've fought for years as disability accessibility requirements are now desperately needed by everybody more than ever. I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
So you go to a public washroom and it's time to wash your hands. I bet in the era of the pandemic, you would prefer to go to a public washroom where you don't have to touch and use the controls to turn on the water.
I don't want to go to a public washroom at all.
Well, there you go. But if you're out there, you may have no choice.
Yeah.
And to get the soap out of the dispenser, you don't want to push the button. You don't want to have to do that to get a towel. You wish it was all automated. Mm. Now, those were requirements those adaptations were created for people with disabilities. And too often when we've advocated for them in the past, people say, oh, it costs too much. We can't require that. That kind of opposition we've faced for years. Well, now I bet everybody out there wish we had won those battles. Because now you need those as public safety requirements, because the moment you wash your hands and then have to crank the towel dispenser, you could well be undoing the very benefit of washing your hands. You may be again exposing yourself to COVID. So this is an illustration of accommodations that help us, that could help everyone. I'll give you a second example.
Oh, wait, before you do, I just want to remind people who are listening. We are talking to David Lepofsky, who's the chair of the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. And what you're mentioning is so interesting and makes sense.
Oh, and I feel like you touched on this a little bit. You know, if we truly want to see change for people with disabilities, how do we get them involved? Because clearly no one's consulting you on. You seem like a leading expert in this, and you're laying out this blueprint. How do we get them a seat at the table with these people that can actually make the changes and influence these things?
Well, my coalition, which is a nonprofit voluntary coalition up here, if you go to aodaalliance.org/COVID, you'll see that days after this started, we started demanding that of our governments. Get us to the table. You cannot plan for an emergency without planning for us. Sadly, they were very late to the process and are still dragging their feet. The way I describe it is this, and this is going on everywhere in my country and yours, but my experience is with what's going on here. Let's say you work, forget COVID for a minute. You work in a high-rise office on the 20th floor of a building. You know you got to have a fire plan in case, God forbid, there's a fire. So let's say the fire plan says, well, an alarm goes off. So when you hear it, there'll be lights to show you the way to the stairs to take, and then you go down the stairs. So all of a sudden there's a fire, and the alarm goes off, and you realize, hey, we got some members of our work staff here who are deaf. That alarm doesn't help them.
Yeah.
And the lights to show you the way to the path, the stairs, I happen to be blind. That's not going to show me the way anywhere. And then you get to the top of the stairs, you go, well, we have some employees who use walkers or wheelchairs. They can't go down the stairs. You can't have an emergency plan that assumes that nobody has a disability in a world where we are the minority of everyone. But that has been the way the COVID crisis planning, at least in my country, has been going on.
Well, David, I wanted to ask, or I guess touch on this as we wrap things up. I think it is interesting because in this article that I read, it talked about how now all these things are being put in place, like work from home, virtual events, virtual accessibility. And we're seeing like it's making way for more accessibility for people with disabilities, not just everyone who's needing to obviously do what they're doing, continue their lives.
Absolutely. Before COVID, there were too many employees with disabilities who had to fight for the opportunity to work at home because some employers, not all, some employers said, oh, we can't allow that. It might not work. You might not be productive. Now we found out it can work for everybody.
Yes.
And I mean, I know one employee who literally 24 hours or 48 hours before COVID hit was still getting grief from their boss about their request to work at home. And then 24 to 48 hours later,
it's changed,
they're told,
yeah,
hey, guess what? Everybody works at home.
Well, so, you know what, David, we have to wrap. We have to talk to you more about this.
This
is such an important topic.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't even realize this, all of this. So thank you for bringing this to light for all of us.
Great to get a chance to talk to you and stay safe.
Yes, you too. And of course, check out, you can get involved and find out more, AODAalliance.org. That was David Lepofsky, the chair of the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. All right, next on Let's Go There, why you could be immune to COVID-19 without even contracting it. Details on a new study on immunity coming up in 10 minutes. We are back, and you could be immune to COVID-19 without even contracting it. Back to break down this new study that reveals all of this is Dr. Amish Adalja from Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So what were the biggest discoveries around the study published in the journal Nature around immunity?
Well, what we're learning is that people who have been exposed to other coronaviruses in their life, and remember that this COVID-19 virus is the 7th human coronavirus that we've discovered, mm-hmm. and 4 of those coronaviruses cause about 25% of our common colds, that people do have some cross-reactive immunity. And that's not in the form of antibodies, but in another part of your immune system called your T cells. And T cells are really important. That's the target cell that HIV attacks. And those are kind of the orchestrators of the immune response. And what we're finding is some people who've never had COVID-19 have T cells that recognize it, meaning that there is some cross-immunity that's likely being engendered by being exposed to other coronaviruses that cause the common cold at prior parts of your life.
So when we think about immunity, and I guess because that means obviously you can't ever get it, should we be thinking about it in that case? Does it actually mean that someone will ever get the virus?
No, it doesn't mean that. And immunity doesn't just mean that you don't ever get the virus. Not all immunity is what we call sterilizing immunity. Some immunity may mean that it modulates the infection. I mean, you might get infected, but you're less likely to have severe symptoms, or you might be less contagious. So it's not the case that these T cells are providing people with an immunity that likely prevents them from completely being infected, but it probably does provide them maybe with something that might diminish their ability to get severe disease or need hospitalization or develop pneumonia.
Mm.
So why was this so important to discover? Why are these results really interesting as it relates to the community and where you're at from your perspective?
So I think that it's important because it helps us understand what does immunity look like for this virus, and is there other things that we can rely on while we're trying to find some way to control this virus? And does T cell immunity, does it explain why some people maybe don't get very sick when they get this? Does it explain why children have this the presentation that they do? Or does T cell immunity make you more susceptible to severe disease? So we've got to tease all of that out. But it's more about understanding the mysteries of this virus and how it interacts with prior coronavirus exposures that humans have had. And it's going to be important when we think about vaccines and we're looking at T cell as well. And if it is something that is beneficial, that prevents people from needing to be hospitalized, does that really help us with our herd immunity calculations? Meaning, can we get away with a little bit less vaccination because T cell immunity will keep certain people from ever needing the hospital for this? So there's a lot of implications to this work, but really it's about unraveling the mysteries of the virus.
Yeah. Dr. Amish Adalja joins us again from Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security as we talk about COVID-19 immunity and how you could actually be immune without even contracting it. That's according to this new study. And so, yeah, let's get into the vaccine side of this conversation and how that will influence things.
So vaccines are going to do various things when they're administered to a person, stimulate various arms of the immune system. And part of that is going to be developing antibodies, which is what everybody has heard of. And that's something we usually think about with vaccines, but they're also going to stimulate this T-cell immunity as well. Mm. And we're going to have a lot of vaccine candidates that we're going to have to compare in terms of how efficacious they are, how well do they prevent you from getting infected, how well do they prevent you from having complications, as well as what is the safety profile of these, and in what risk groups did these vaccines have the best effects, the worst effects. All of that's going to be part of how we think about vaccines. But that's really the only way that we control this virus and move out of this pandemic phase, is by getting enough of the population vaccinated so that this is no longer a threat to the world.
When we're hearing reports or stories like this, how optimistic should we really be?
Well, I don't think there's anything to be optimistic or pessimistic about. This is just a scientific finding that really helps us understand what the coronavirus is in terms of the way it reacts to the immune system and the way the immune system reacts to it. It's part of understanding how the immune system, how important the immune response is to the coronavirus, and how important it is to understand it when we're trying to develop theories about herd immunity, theories about vaccination, theories about why some people get sick and why some people have very mild symptoms.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Really interesting stuff. We appreciate it.
Sure.
That was Dr. Amish Adalja in the middle of work right now, giving us a call, and let's go there to give us all the info from Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Now coming up, could your mask soon double as a language translator as well? That would be cool. Find out next in What's Trending This Hour. Welcome back to the show. This is Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan. And let me tell you, you gotta listen to Loveline tonight right after Let's Go There, because Dr. Chris is back and is talking about cultural fat phobia and how that affects our daily life choices. They're also going to be sliding into, I guess you've slid into their DMs. They're going to be answering your love and sex questions. That's why you got to slide into the Loveline DMs. That's how it works.
There we go. Shira just figured out sliding into DMs.
Everyone's sliding into each other's DMs. Love
it. Yeah, I mean, no contact. You can't. You got to figure out how to do it with social distancing in these streets.
Exactly. All right, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour, though. Today on CNN, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Democrats are not willing to negotiate on the $600 unemployment benefit figure. As you might remember, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had pitched lowering it to $200 in the HEALS Act.
No, I think that the number, the $600, is related more to the unemployment rate. As if the unemployment goes down, then that number can go down. But it doesn't go down. You know, you're not saying to the American people, we have more infections, we have more deaths, we have more unemployment, we have more hunger, and now we're going to get cut your benefit. Right. That's just not going to happen.
Okay, she's being bullish. So hopefully, you know.
She's being what?
Bullish. Like you're into it. You're like,
ooh,
a bull.
That's the first time. Never heard that.
Yeah, I just threw it out there.
Bullish. Wow.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, I've never heard of that. And I think if I would have thought of bullish, I would have thought of like someone who's defying what they're supposed to do.
No, she's just being very clear about it. Even though there had been some rumors that they were willing to let it go.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully there'll be a negotiation. Yep. Now, the White House is requiring random testing of those in the president's executive office staff. It's a new screening procedure that had been voluntary. Well, that's safe. As part of our ongoing efforts to protect the health and safety of the entire White House complex, randomized testing of executive office of the president's staff, which has been ongoing for several months, will become mandatory rather than voluntary. How is this not put in place earlier? Don't you think with the pandemic that maybe it would have been mandatory?
Questions we all have.
All right. Now, a Japanese startup, Donut Robotics, is innovating face masks. They created a smart mask. You use this app while wearing the C-Face smart mask, and it can transcribe dictation, amplify your voice, and translate speech into 8 different languages.
Wait, so this has nothing to do with donuts?
No, it's just a cool name, I guess.
Oh, screw that. I mean, that's great that they're making masks, but I thought it was like robots wearing masks making donuts, but whatever.
The cutouts on the front, though, are vital for breathability, they said, so the smart mask doesn't offer protection against the coronavirus. Great innovation. Instead, it is designed to be worn over a standard face mask. So you got your face mask, you got the smart mask, and then it'll like talk for you, and like then it can translate language. Is pretty cool if we can ever actually travel. That was somewhat trending this hour, but we're moving into top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
Who picked that story? Oh my God. All right, here's some pop culture stories that are trending right now. So Terry Crews, he's apologizing again to Gabrielle Union after she basically said in a recent interview that he tried to discredit and malign her amid that whole America's Got Talent controversy that happened. Mm-hmm. Well, he's taken to his Twitter account basically this past weekend on Saturday, and he said he was sorry to Gabrielle. He noted that he would do it again if required. He said, "This will be my third public apology to Gabrielle Union. If a fourth is needed, I will continue to apologize and push for reconciliation between the world and, more importantly, the culture I grew up in. I'm sorry, at it's Gabrielle Union." So, yeah, I think, you know, one, I think he should just delete all his social media. He doesn't deserve to have it at any point. And I doubt Gabrielle even really cares about his apology at this point. I think she just said how she felt and she's moving on from the situation.
I think at this point, I would hope they're having maybe a private conversation. And then after that, he would do a public one. Like, remember when Mandy Moore, when her ex-husband publicly apologized for doing some crazy stuff? And she was like, "I'm surprised why he didn't just apologize privately to me, why he made it into like a public thing, press thing."
Well, because clearly that's all he does. He tweets and says these awful things that gets all this attention, and he thinks he's being edgy or smart, and he's really not. I'm surprised he's even keeping his jobs, but not shocked, to be honest. It's just another guy stuck in that get out world like Kanye West.
Terry Crews or Bryan Adams?
Who is Bryan Adams?
That's Mandy Moore's ex.
Oh, why would we be talking about him?
Because I mentioned how, like, you,
I moved past
apologies.
That white man. I was back on Twitter.
But I was like, and Get Out, Terry Crews and Get Out. I just thought, okay.
Yeah, Terry Crews and Get Out. Do you not understand the reference?
Yeah, I didn't understand the reference.
It's okay.
I thought it was
yeah, it's fine.
I have seen Get Out. I was just trying to figure it out in reference.
It's all right. It's a Monday, y'all. We're going to give everybody grace and space today. But let's move on out of the tea report. Let's move on to a Channel Q initiative that we're doing, which is absolutely amazing. You know, children and their families all over Southern California are going to bed hungry.
Yep.
And so Channel Q and Radio.com have an easy way for you to help feed local students and their families. Tell it all about it, Sharon.
Yeah. All you have to do is text the word NEED, N-E-E-D, to 76278 to give a buck and put food in the mouth of a hungry kid and their loved ones. That's NEED to 76278. And just $1 can make a huge difference.
Yeah, so if you want to learn more about that, it's called Feed Our Families. Go to our socials at We Are Channel Q and at WeAreChannelQ.com.
Yep, it's such a great initiative. We're really proud to be part of it. Now coming up, Harry Haynes was an actor and musician who a lot of us knew from American Horror Story and The OA and left us way too soon. And coming up, Harry's mother joins us to discuss their legacy and new music being released. So Harry Haynes was a musician, actor. You knew them from shows like American Horror Story and The OA, and they were a powerful voice in the LGBTQ+ community who left us too soon. But his music is now being released, and Harry went by Anti-Boy as a musician. And here's a snippet from their latest single, Good Enough, out now. And now we are so honored to have Harry's mother, actress Jane Badler, joining us right now to talk about the legacy that Harry has left behind and so much more. Thanks for being here. So Jane, tell us why you decided to release his music after his passing.
Well, Harry was such an extraordinary boy, and he was super charismatic, and he had such a huge vision. I think his music was the vehicle through which he was able to express this extraordinary world that he wanted to create called Anti-Boy. Anti-Boy was a character within a world. And he had already finished one album, and we now have a second album that we're finishing up. And I guess I want not only for my son's legacy to continue on, but I also feel that it's an important message right now with everything going on in the world. I think it's always been an important message about the fact that we are just, Harry believed that we're one consciousness, that we're one love, that we even have a song called that. And, you know, basically that there's no gender, no race, no, I mean, we're all equal. And this is a social construct. When we look at black, we look at queer, we look at trans, I mean, we kind of label people. But Harry didn't believe in labels, and I think it's a very important time to get his music and the message out there.
So, you know, not many people in the queer trans community can identify with having such a supportive parent and really someone who is championing them in the way that you're doing, especially with, you know, Harry's legacy. Can you talk a little bit about that and how parents can also reflect your actions as well?
Yeah, well, you know, when Harry was born, you know, this is the way you're born. This is not something that you choose. Mm-hmm. And Harry was born like, you know, very different. He went to private schools and he never fit in. Everyone was off, you know, kind of going to football and rowing. And he was always playing with the girls and going to the art department. So I don't know if he got bullied so much. I just think he felt a sense of isolation growing up that was very traumatic for him. Because, you know, when you're a little kid, you don't quite know, why don't I feel like everybody else? And I think he identified himself as gender fluid at some point. His father, you know, came from a particular type of background and he didn't quite understand it, which I think is true of a lot of people that have children that don't fit into a box. Mm-hmm. They don't really know, well, this is not what I, you know, signed up for. What is this? I was going to have a kid who knew a boy who did boy things. And I'll never forget, Harry was 17. He got dressed for his formal in a dress. He came out in a dress. He wasn't a drag. He wasn't drag. He just wore what he wanted to wear. Yeah. And his dad went over to him and he said, baby, you look beautiful.
Aww.
It was like, it was so amazing. And I knew like at that point that Stephen was totally accepting of the fact he didn't still quite understand it, but he loved his son. And of course, now we understand that that vision is the only vision that there should be in this world.
Again, we are talking to actress Jane Badler, who happens to be the mom of Harry Haynes, musician, actor, and we played their music. They're known as Anti-Boy, and Good Enough is a single that's out now. Can you talk about the meaning behind Good Enough?
Yeah. So I'm just going to read something because Harry said it better than anyone. Harry was interviewed in a lot of magazines. And Anti-Boy is Harry. And Anti-Boy was Harry's baby that he created. And it was a character that he created that was gender fluid and lived in the future. It was stuck in a virtual reality world that was malfunctioning. Wow. He goes, that's why the album is called Glitch in Paradise, because this character is living in a loop of heartbreak. Okay? And that's a glitch. Harry wrote the album. He was with a boy for 4 years, and it was kind of this thing where you're always trying to connect with someone, and it never quite, the connection never is what you need desperately.
I get that. I get it.
Okay. Right? A lot of us have this. Love addiction, call it whatever you want, all right? Okay. Well, Harry had it.
So wait, Miss Jane, I have a question. Were you ever reluctant when you were beginning this process and after this untimely death and you were just like, what can I do? Were you reluctant with pushing his music out and giving it to the world? Did you want to keep it to yourself?
Oh my God, it's not an easy decision. And the whole journey is fraught. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've had a lot of things with the demos. He did demos with a very big producer in Miami, and now we're getting those out. But this first album, we couldn't figure out, do we release this album? Do we release the demos? And I guess when someone passes, especially a child that was as unusual, as charismatic, that had so much to say as Harry, it's almost like you have no choice.
Yeah.
It's not even about me anymore, you know, like what I feel and what I want. And I get emotional, but it's kind of like bigger. There's something bigger driving me and I kind of have to do it.
Yes. Well, thank you for doing all that work and for continuing to bring his work to all his fans and everyone else who didn't even know him. Now they get to know him and his work. It's amazing. Again, that was Harry Hayne's mother, actress Jane Badler. You can listen to his album out very soon, A Glitch in Paradise. In the meantime, he's got his single Good Enough by Antiboy out now. Please go check it out. Now coming up, can TikTok actually be banned from the US? And is Microsoft going to buy the app? The latest on the TikTok controversy and the war between Trump and China, that's next. We are back, and Trump keeps saying he's going to ban TikTok. But could it be saved, and how? Earlier today, he did say TikTok will be out of business by September 15th and gave us insights on his conversations with Microsoft as a possible acquirer.
And here's the deal. I don't mind if, whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, a big company, a secure company, very, very American company, buy it. It's probably easier to buy the whole thing than to buy 30% of it. Because I say, how do you do 30%? Who's going to get the name? The name is hot. The brand is hot. And who's going to get the name? How do you do that if it's owned by two different companies? So my personal opinion was you're probably better off buying the whole thing rather than buying 30% of it. I think buying 30% is complicated. But if somebody, and whether it's Microsoft or somebody else, buys it, that'll be interesting. I did say that if you buy it, whatever the price is, that goes to whoever owns it, because I guess it's China, essentially, but more than anything else. I said a very substantial portion of that price is going to have to come into the Treasury of the United States.
Joining us to break this all down is CNET editorial director Jason Heiner. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
So what's your take on this latest response that Trump has? I mean, he said this at a recent press conference that, you know, if someone's willing to buy the app, he won't necessarily ban it. What's going on?
Yeah, and the Trump administration has kind of been telegraphing for a little while, right? That they're like, we're taking a look at this. We're seeing if this could violate people's privacy. And mostly they're worried about it. And they said it. They said, we're worried that all these Americans are giving their data and to TikTok, and they're afraid that the Chinese government is going to have access to it. They said that, you know, straight away. And so the deal that's kind of been worked out to keep TikTok running in the US potentially is them selling TikTok, ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, which is based in Beijing, selling the US users and version of the app to Microsoft, and Microsoft then doing a security audit, moving the data from China over here, and then adding some more US-based security to it so that people can keep dancing on TikTok and teenagers can keep doing their thing. That's where it stands at the moment.
All right. Well, I think that a lot of people are wondering, you know, is this fight against TikTok from the Trump administration, do you think this is going to make more young people vote for Biden? Or do you think it's going to make a lot of young people, you know, just anti-Trump, even though a lot of them are, but, you know, come out to actually vote because he is attacking one of their favorite platforms?
You know, I think that would be more the case, like if there was an outage and, like, you know, TikTok went down for a month while all this was happening, I think that would probably be more likely. I think it's less likely if the users never see, you know, anything, they never see an outage, they never see any disruption, and they just keep being able to use it. And in the background, now it's owned by Microsoft, and maybe they have to accept some new terms of service at one point, which they'll just click through as fast as possible and never really take a hard look at it. But maybe that's a cynical view, but, you know, most people don't really dig that deep into these kinds of issues when it comes to tech.
That is true. Again, you're listening to CNET editorial director Jason Heiner. I always say we're a bit in a bubble. We forget that. You know what I mean?
Like, if an American company like Microsoft actually purchased TikTok and took over its operation, I mean, would that really even solve the problem?
Yeah. So what it sounds like, and obviously they've given themselves to the middle of September to work out a deal on this, if they can work out a deal between ByteDance, the company that in Beijing that owns it, and Microsoft. And what Microsoft has said that is that the new structure would build on the experience TikTok users currently love while adding world-class security, privacy, and digital safety protection. So all of that just meaning that they would take all of the data from China and bring it over to servers here. So I think that ultimately what they're trying to do is make it look like to TikTok users that they're not really going to see anything different and probably never notice a change if all of it goes as planned. Whereas the US government then gets placated that, you know, they're not worried about Americans given all of this free data about America to a Chinese company that they have questions about. Obviously, there's other companies that have had this experience before, and it's been more of a challenge, like Huawei and others whose devices, you know, are not available in the US.
Yeah.
And they can no longer use other software and stuff like that.
I was going to ask that if this is unique, because it seems like he's just using this as like a point of attack for China. And oh, so if this problem goes away, well, will the issues with China go away? Probably not. But is this distracting from something? Because it just seems to be so much at the forefront.
Yeah, it really is. And what the Chinese will say is that this is all politics. It's all, gamesmanship and that kind of thing, that really the US is scared of these Chinese companies building really good products and attracting a lot of users, and then them not going to US-based products like Facebook or others, right? That this is ultimately about an unfair battle they're trying to wage against Chinese companies so that American companies can be more successful. That's what the Chinese will argue. You can read that in the New York Times and other places too.
All right. CNET editorial director Jason Heiner, thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure.
Now coming up, a Hollywood director is becoming a weatherman in quarantine. Yep, that and more next on our Yas Queen of the Day. We're wrapping up our show, as usual, with our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
So this is something that is a bit awkward, but it's very funny. At least I think it is. But, you know, I love awkward humor. Everyone is picking up on director David Lynch's odd daily weather reports, which seem to be exactly what we need right now.
It's August 3, 2020, and once again, we have a Monday. Here in L.A., looks like a beautiful day coming along. Very nice early morning sunshine. Very still right now. Around 65 degrees Fahrenheit, 18 Celsius. Should be going up to the low 80s this afternoon Fahrenheit, around 27 degrees Celsius.
He's an old guy. He's an old weather guy. So you can enjoy that right now on his YouTube channel. He posts that daily. Talk about commitments.
I love that. I mean, other people would just do a newsletter, but this guy does videos.
I mean, just turn the video on. He literally looks around. He like obviously has the weather, and then he just like looks around him, looks out the window.
Just to give some insider notes. Shira picked this one. I didn't have anything to do with it. So
it's
if you
so
didn't
good.
Laugh and you hated it, it's all on Shira.
Hey, yeah, I will take the blame for that. Yes. It was trending on Twitter, though, so it's not just me. Now, this one goes out to the U.S. Navy's first Black female tactical aircraft pilot. How about that? Lieutenant Madeline Swagel, who received her Wings of Gold on Friday, marking a historic milestone for naval aviation. The first Black female tactical aircraft pilot. Pretty amazing.
I don't even know what those words mean, but I like the first Black.
But it's historic.
Even though it is, I mean, it's 2020, and you would think that this probably would have happened a long time ago, and I think you have this, like, overall look of, like, the first. We're still having these first moments, but shout out to her. This is incredible. She worked hard for this.
Yeah, she said, I'm excited to have this opportunity to work harder and fly high-performance jet aircraft in the fleet. It would have been nice to see someone who looked like me in this role. I never intended to be the first. I hope it's encouraging to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it is. And that is our Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
I was going to say, do we have any personal shout out, Yas Queen shout outs? No, we don't need to do that. I was going to give a shout out to my dad, who's going back to therapy.
I love that. I love that for your dad. Personal growth is most definitely
yes, a thing. He's going to therapy for the first time in his life. Mm. I'm so proud of him. So
I'm proud of him too. Know,
that was on my mind today. I really wanted to share that.
That's good. That's really good.
That's what's happening in quarantine, you guys. It's happening. Family therapy. All right, we are back tomorrow on Channel Q, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about political candidates who are now embracing their criminal pasts. How about that? How does that work?
I mean, who knew there were so many political candidates that had criminal pasts? Interesting.
Yeah, But we're getting into that tomorrow. Plus, how one woman is decolonizing the outdoors and proving nature isn't just for cis white men.
Right.
I'm down for that. Okay. I mean, I'm staring at nature right now and I just want to jump out of the window. Oh, but it's close. Like, it's not like it's a huge jump. All right. That's on tomorrow's show. We'll see you there. And remember, we have a podcast. So join our podcast fam. Just go to the radio.com app and search Let's Go There to subscribe to our podcast. We post there daily.
Yes,
we're sending
please.
You love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.